Yes, till I reach the highest ground, people keep on believing. Lovers keep on loving, believers keep on believing till I reach the highest ground. It's Stevie Wonder coming to you live. Pastor Ev Riggins on Wrap It Up Live Sunday night, pulling on in. Been out with the horses today, some traveling road trips coming back into the house. I had to laugh from engineer because we got it right tonight on the intro song. It is Sunday night, not Tuesday night. But I hope you're out there listening to us. Wrap It Up Live tonight. We're talking politics, local, state, nationwide. We're talking politics. Going to be election in a couple of weeks. On a local level here, I think November, the first Saturday or something, first Saturday in November, something similar to that in here in Houston and state of Texas, Louisiana, all across. The local elections are going on for mayors, maybe for governors in some areas. A governor for Louisiana, I mean, for Texas last year. But mayors, different other local seats, local propositions. In Louisiana, I don't know if it's governor or not. I think it's going to be next year and it's time for the president to run. But also on a national level, the presidential race is heating up because January will be here soon for the Iowa caucuses. And we've had it on the first Democratic debate on last week. And so I want to hear from you. Talk to us tonight. I know there was a couple of questions on last week that was laid out by Mr. DeCarter. I want to try to answer those questions tonight. Are you out there, D? If not, can you engage us and begin to refresh our memory about what you was asking me last week, if you're out there?
Well, I'm here. I can't remember the exact questions I asked, but I'll tell you what. I like the subject matters you're bringing, and I hope Rihanna's is on. I hope Ron is on. Okay, wait a minute. Give me a second. Oh God, dog. Your high school
Marianne.
Friend. No, not Marianne. I hope Baron Glass. I hope Marianne is on. I hope Baron Glass is on. You know what? I'll tell you what. I think I asked you about the separation of church and state.
And about abortion, right?
Yeah. So those are a few questions that I asked, and then I backdoored, and I was talking about abortions with Marianne, and Rihanna the other day, and I couldn't understand why people are so hip, if I can say the word, hip up on the death penalty, but they hate mm-hmm. people to kill babies, but then they hate to pay if you have a young couple or a young lady that needs some assistance, why they wouldn't give welfare when you,
okay.
if you base welfare based on how much money people get or how much money the taxpayers pay for putting somebody on death row for 15 to 20 years.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna try to address it from political point of view, a spiritual point of view, and then common sense. We all know that when you put it down, God does not like anyone to die. What is a death sentence? I wouldn't believe that God's called for us to give us the right to take somebody's life, but the law of the land says that some states have the death sentence, but I'm not for that. Also, I don't believe that God would want a woman to, on purpose, after she's got pregnant, just go and kill a baby because she don't want the baby, but I don't have control of that woman because we should have free will. Now, one of the issues that the Republicans try to do, they try to put it all in one package, and that's where they're hypocritical. If one of their daughters were raped or incest or so forth and the person got pregnant, do they really want that baby to be born or not? And so, or the greatest thing of it is if it's going to be the life of the mother. And they posed it to Huckabee the other day, about a few weeks ago. They said, what about the life of a mother, Mr. Huckabee, Governor Huckabee? What about if the mother, they know the mother's going to die in this childbirth. What you going to do then? You know, he tried to come with some answers to say, like, maybe God might work a miracle out and the mama might still live through it, but if the mama don't live through that childbirth, then maybe God choose and pick for that child to be born and the mama to die. That's not antiquated. Back in the 1800s and 1900s, you didn't have medical care. You didn't know if the mama was going to die, and people died in childbirth. When you know if the mama's about to have this baby and she can't carry that baby to term without dying, and you got to choose. You know the mama's already living. If the baby's going to die, the mama's going to die in childbirth, how do we know if the baby's not going to live either? But we're going to take that chance of the mama dying, knowing the mama's going to die, but take the chance on the baby living. So once again, I do not believe that the government or the law of the land should regulate or tell a woman what to do with her body. Now, I'm not going to say that I believe in abortions. No, sir. But I believe in a woman's right to choose. To go farther to your question, sir, when they did not have the woman have a right to choose and they outlawed abortions, people went into back alleys, people went into cheap clinics. They used clothes hangers. They used all type of stuff that was not legal, nor was even medically conducive to what was happening, and the baby and the mama would die, and so because people were going to break the law anyway. Furthermore, if they want these babies to be born, then why do they get upset like you say? If they need welfare, do you know that? Numerically speaking, there are more Anglo-Americans on welfare than African-Americans. But percentage-wise, when you compare the percentage of African-Americans to Anglo-Americans in America, the higher percentage is African-Americans or Hispanic-Americans, but the numbers in mass are more Anglo-Americans. And also, welfare is supposed to be a system in which it's supposed to bridge you over into a better life, a better job. However, when someone gets a better job at a certain point or make too much money, they'll cut the assistance away from you to where you like in no man's land, where you're not making enough of money to be able to make it, but you can't get the welfare. And so what some of these people get caught in what you call a trap system. You want to talk about trap queen, hello. Some of them get into a trap system where they have to have the welfare, so that's why they don't go get the job, or that's why they won't marry the man that has the job. So they got the side. They got the sugar daddy who give them the money on the side, but they're still getting the welfare money, the food stamps, and they can sell some of them and get some more cash. You say, Pastor, why you? I'm not condoning all that. I'm telling you how it works because they've rigged the system to where once you're in there, it's hard to get out of it, but then they'll talk about you and say you're living on assistance and we want to cut out these welfare programs altogether. So that's kind of my thoughts, my first thoughts I'm throwing out there. Hope there are other calls out there that can chime in and add to it. I'm not being thorough in everything, but I'm just giving my top off the top of my head some of the issues I have with the questions you're asking with the Republican Party and with people in general about these questions.
Can I add something?
Yes.
I want to add that right now what the Republicans are wanting and what they've been trying for years to do about their opposition to abortion might shed some light on their real motives because it really doesn't make sense that they are so against abortion just on principle, but yet they're totally fine with the death penalty and would advocate for it and push back against abolishing it in a lot of cases. They are totally fine with taking funding away from programs that do help children who live in underserved communities. Impoverished children, right. And so what it might help us to understand that their motivation, like what they're trying to do under this cloak of, oh, we think abortion is horrible and we oppose it, for real principled reasons, is defund Planned Parenthood. The CBO has projected, and actually a lot of different independent studies have confirmed this year after year after year, every time they try to defund Planned Parenthood, that over 10 years, it would cost our government, I think it was like $180 billion in different kinds of benefits extended to the children who are born unplanned. as well as if you take these services, if you take away women's option to go to Planned Parenthood with Medicaid or Title X, which is the only funding that we're really talking about, the number of abortions, the number of unwanted pregnancies goes up, and with that number, so does the number of abortions that would end up happening. So they're not really trying to prevent abortions, because defunding Planned Parenthood would only make that number spike. They're trying to limit women's access to health care. They're trying to limit and control the decisions that women make for their own bodies and for using birth control and family planning. They're trying to, like, roll back the clock and take autonomy away from women to have the right over their own bodies. It can't possibly be about really abortion, because this would only make that number spike. I'm sorry, that was long-winded. I was having trouble getting to it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, let me ask you another question. I'm going to let Dee come back in. But if their wives have the nice doctors and they have the good insurance mm-hmm. programs, and matter of fact, all of them are on Obamacare now, if you pay attention.
Right. Even Ted Cruz.
Right, even Ted Cruz, because his wife lost his job. So
yep.
if their wives get good doctors, and that doctor's going to give them birth control pills, because, you know, because in other words, unless they only going to get together and have consummate their marriage once or twice a year and hope they don't get pregnant,
uh-huh.
hello,
uh-huh.
then you know they have birth control pills or something, or they're using some type of birth control device or something.
Yeah.
So why are they being so hypocritical? It's just like the Pharisees in the Bible. That's what gets me so upset. Jesus says, look, why do you want the woman to be healed that's been over 18 years? Whenever you know your donkey going to get in the ditch, you got to go pull him out of the ditch, or you got to give him some water.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you're going to take mm-hmm. care of yourself. Why do you want somebody to take care of themselves? That's what I'm worried about and concerned about. Go ahead, D, jump in, brother.
Well, you know, just to kind of add to it, you know, and this is one of the things I've been thinking about. You know, I don't know if anybody knows or not. I think I said it before. I'm not a woman. Surprise.
Well, I got to come out of here.
Yeah, I'm not a woman. But, you know, it strikes a stark difference when you're talking about, you know, and maybe I don't hate to say this, or maybe I'm not saying it the right way. When you bring up religion, do you want your daughter to come up and get pregnant and abort the baby? Or do you want your daughter to grow up, get pregnant, and she's not ready, and have to move on to a divorce and go to another marriage and have kids outside of wedlock? I mean, which way do you want to go? You can't have this thing like it's the 1920s when you had it back when you can rape and pillage. And that's including any and every race and any and every religion. You can't have it that way. Prime example, and when you're dealing with some of the mullahs in the Islamic State, you know, women are very protected, and they only for procreation, okay? But the Muslims on that side, they've got so sick to where all they do is attack and molest boys. I don't know if y'all know that or not. That's not a huge story, you know, in our country. But I'm asking, do you want to sit there and teach contraceptives to kids, or do you want to sit there and let them get pregnant and have venereal diseases?
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy if you're a Black Panther member and your daughter gets impregnated by a white man? Or are you happy if you're in the Ku Klux Klan and your daughter gets pregnant by a black man? I mean,
right,
you're
going to the extreme,
just
yes,
to go.
Understand,
I mean,
yes,
but
sir.
That's pretty much where we are, because we would be way far left and way far right. If we don't find some kind of common ground in the middle to do this thing, we're gonna be in trouble. And nobody, we've never seen. Give me the last name of a Republican candidate that was running for office that got raped by a black person, or the last Democrat that was white that was raped by a black person, and vice versa. A white Republican, or let's say a black Republican, whose child was raped by a black man, and the same thing on the other side, and they had that child. Don't tell me it's never happened. Please don't tell me that.
Right.
I can tell you
we
something
don't know.
That did
right.
happen.
We just right. We just don't know. It's a family secret.
Yeah.
Right. And but
well,
they want to come out and
that,
make a public stance mm-hmm. that they want to hold family secrets on.
Mm-hmm.
That makes
well,
sense.
There is a Congressman Scott DeJarlais, who was on the committee questioning Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood. He had to give his time. He sat on that committee, and he had to give his time to other people because he wisely did so, knowing that he would be called a straight-up hypocrite if he would have questioned her. So he gave his time away because while married, he got two different mistresses and his wife, all pregnant, and paid for all three of them to get abortions. But he has always advocated for the public policy against abortion. So,
you see that?
You know, I,
yes.
it's not what the scenario D threw out there, but it's, you know, that's one that I do know of, one scenario, how people feel and what they say, the words that come out of their mouth, and how they really live their lives.
Right, and see, if you would have tried to bring that out, the media tries to bring that out. He'll try to talk about the defamation of character and
mm-hmm.
and all this other kind of stuff because he'll say he's digging in his personal business, but then you sit there with public policy and it's not practice what I preach, but do as I say, but not as I do. And that's
right.
that's what really happens with these with the Republicans is that if you're going to be real about it, put yourself in a real-life situation. This man is a real-life situation where in which he, mm-hmm. the way he handled it was, he decided to choose, because he could have chose adoption for all three of those, right? He could have chose adoption, right? Couldn't he have chosen adoption?
Of course he could have.
Yeah.
He could have chose adoption. So that's the other option that's out there is adoption. So like I said, I don't champion abortion. I would choose adoption personally, but I'm not going to put my beliefs on it. See, I don't believe in that you legislate morality. You cannot legislate morality. That's what the law in the Bible was showing you. With 1,305 laws, the Bible says you're guilty of one, you're guilty of all of them. So you can't legislate morality. So you got to come with truth and grace. You got to come with some covering. You got to come with some space for somebody to have some mercy and justice. And that's where they get wrong at because they'll sit there, and he wanted mercy and justice for his situation. So he knew he wasn't even qualified to even go there and say anything to this woman because he knew if he did, they would have to say, okay, what, look at you, hypocrite. And he'd have to say, well, please give me mercy and justice. Well, the same mercy and justice you want, you should want to give to someone else. And that's where this is where I find fault with public policy like this. Yes.
Yes. But can I add one more thing to that?
Yes.
And I've told Dee this before, and I've told my whole story on Blog Talk USA. But, you know, I'm a living example of what can be our reality and what oftentimes is true. The more education we provide to our children, the better off, the better decisions they make, that you don't have to force people into a corner to do what you want them to do as a matter of public policy. I grew up in a home where my mom was she always taught me the value of the right that we have over our own bodies and how important that right is. She didn't frame it in that because you're allowed to get an abortion. It wasn't about that. It was, you know, this is important that women have autonomy over their own medical decisions because it was dark days when women didn't have that autonomy. To control and hold people down is never that never pans out very well in a society. But she taught me in our home, you know, to value life and the sanctity of life and how precious life is. So I always knew, I understood the value of pro-choice in our home, but I also personally understood the value of life. So when I found myself in a situation as a teenager, pregnant, I knew I had a choice, and because of my upbringing and education, thank God I had education and understood choices, I personally chose adoption. And that's, we make better decisions when we're not backed into a corner and we have no choice. When we have no choice, we make desperate decisions. When we have all of our choices out in front of us and a strong education and values in our home, people, you can trust people to make their own decisions. And 9 times out of 10, they'll make a decision that is, you know, that is less desperate. The number of abortions, the number of unwanted pregnancies in general goes down in areas where you have full reproductive health education. And it goes up in areas where they only teach abstinence and where things are repressed and you're not given a choice. You make desperate choices in desperate situations when you have no choices.
Yes, very much so, because I've known religious folk who their kids talk, all they taught their kids was, you know, abstinence and right. And then when the daughters come up pregnant, to try to hide it, they'll find a way to have an abortion, whether it be the family that endorses it or the daughter does it secretly, because now they have not held up the standard of abstinence, but nobody gave them the full choice of understanding that when you make a mistake, there are other options with the mistake that you can have,
right,
which include adoption. So they gave me you either or. And sad to say, the world is not black and white, and that's a pun. It's not black and white.
Right.
There are different shades of brown, different shades of pink, different shades, and so it is with life. Life is not a black and white situation. Life is very complex and complicated. And we have to find ourselves to make the right choices at the right time. There's so many other issues we want to talk about tonight. We want to talk about Donald Trump calling out George W. Bush. I want to talk about Proposition 1 in Houston and other issues. Let's come back. I'll hit a song called Heaven Knows by Dietrich Haddon, and we'll come back.
The homeless is still homeless, the poor is still poor, yet we find billions of dollars to fund senseless war. And yes, we're fighting terrorism. What about the quiet racism dividing among ourselves? Somebody's crying for help. Heaven is listening. Heaven is watching. Heaven knows. And they may not play this on the radio, cause the devil don't want you to know. If we don't stop the hypocrisy, the nation will lose its soul. Then rather play music about money and sex, like we don't have no intellect. Somebody need to show some respect, cause God ain't through with us yet. Heaven is listening. Heaven is watching. Heaven knows. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Heaven knows. Heaven knows. The preacher that's not preaching. And heaven knows. The teacher. Stealing. Oh, heaven knows. Heaven knows the ones that are out there killing. Oh, heaven knows. Woo. That the world needs a revival. That we walked away from the Bible. Somewhere we lost our feeling. Oh, heaven is listening. Heaven is watching. Heaven knows. Oh, hey, oh, heaven is listening. Heaven is watching. Heaven knows. Hey.
Yes, yes, Heaven Knows by Dietrich Haddon. Let me tell you a bit about his stories. If you ever never watched Preachers of L.A., the first two seasons that came out on Oxygen, people thought it was a lot of drama, but it was about real life because preachers are like real people like everyone else. Dietrich Haddon, famed gospel artist, very talented, anointed, was pastor of a church in Detroit. He and his wife was a recording artist, gospel recording artist also. They got separated, was going through a separation, and he got another young woman pregnant. They did not take the life of their baby. They had the baby, and then that whole chronicle of him and that young lady putting their lives together was on Preachers of L.A., how they went through the ups and downs, got married, had another baby. He's now rebound. His ministry is back on track. He's back recording gospel music. He's back pastoring again. But it was a process. And that's the whole concept about life. Life is never about how you fall down. It's how you get back up again. It's how you make the choices when you make mistakes. And that's what we're talking about tonight. You can't paint anyone into a corner. And the Republicans, a lot of times, a lot of politicians, sometimes Democrats, or sometimes religious folk, sometimes non-religious folk, paint each other into a corner. And to wrap it up live, we like to share the real truth about life and try to address those issues. On that note, what's the truth about the war in Iraq? What's the truth about 9/11? Donald Trump came out, and I often think that Donald Trump sometimes is setting us up to be a ringer. I often think so. All of his life, before he got to come running for this president of the United States, he's mostly been on the side of Democrats. And it's ironic that the night before he decided to run, he called Bill Clinton. And now in a lot of things that he says, like changing the tax code and taxing the rich and some other issues that he has that fall right in line with the Democratic thought process. And if you listen to me back in 2002, before you met me, or 2001, and I taught in my history classes, and I still teach today, I blame a lot of 9/11 on the whole situation that George W. Bush and his family's in oil business with the Prince of Saudi Arabia, because of the fact that someone Bin Laden is a cousin of the Prince and the King of Saudi Arabia. He did not want to be involved in more in the oil business. They put him out, gave him $25 million, and went to Afghanistan. We propped him up in the war against Russia. And then once he won the war against Russia, we told him we didn't want to do anything else with him. He says, you know what? I'm tired of those people getting oil out of Saudi Arabia. I'm tired of them being in the Middle East.
Turning away into the parking lot.
And he decided to go. I got background noise behind me. And he decided to go and attacked us. Now, I'm not saying that the terrorists didn't do the attack. I'm not saying George W. Bush orchestrated the attack. I'm not saying that he was in favor of the attack. But I will say I believe he's asleep at the wheel. He was asleep at the wheel. They kept trying to warn him about this gentleman that was the counter-terrorist director at the time, was a crossover from Bill Clinton's administration, kept warning President George W. Bush about imminent attacks were coming. Al-Qaeda was trying to do some stuff. He was not listening to the gentleman. He was discounting what he was saying. And I think at one point, I think the gentleman even was asked to resign, or he did resign, based on the fact he wasn't seeing eye to eye. And before you know it, within a month's time, we were attacked. He was asleep at the wheel. And that's what Donald Trump is speaking relative to. Now, everybody don't want to take that because it's not politically correct to say that. I want to know what your thoughts are. What do you think tonight? And do you think that Donald Trump is really a ringer? He's not a ringer. Does he speak the truth sometimes, but he speaks it in a brash way? And I know he has some issues that I don't agree with, far as the way he's treating the immigrants. Some stuff he said about Barack Obama, I don't plan on voting for him. But I do think that there's more to the story than him just being a Republican candidate. Talk to me tonight.
I'll wait and let somebody come in before I come in.
I don't think he's a ringer. I've heard that. I've heard people reference the fact that Bill Clinton had a meeting with him before Trump announced that he was going to run. I've heard people talk about that and say, oh, I bet Bill Clinton put him up to it to make the, you know, Republicans look bad. I don't know if I believe that. Donald Trump really seems to be all about ego to me. But I do believe when he talks about, when he called out George Bush for 9/11, something that I think any of us who have been watching Donald Trump over the years know for sure about him is, first of all, he is a New Yorker through and through, and 9/11, it profoundly affected all of us, but I would imagine profoundly affected New Yorkers, you know, in a real up-close way. So I know he deeply cares, and I know he also very much understands the kind of business ties that George Bush and the Bin Laden, the Bush and the Bin Laden family had, as well as the Halliburton ties, the Carlyle Group ties. He's a businessman. You know, he understands how it goes, kind of the inside of what that kind of business relationship is probably really all about. And so I think that when he calls out George Bush for that, to me, Donald Trump says a lot of things that are ridiculous, but I think that he personally feels that he has some credibility to say what he said, and I don't discount what he said. And I think a lot of people who, I mean, when Michael Moore made that movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, to kind of connect the dots, I mean, it is undeniable the ties between the two families. And, again, I'm not saying that anyone, you know, that Bush put anyone up to anything, or I'm not buying into any or advocating any sort of theory on that. I'm just saying, you know, the relationships were what they were. And Bush really was in Crawford, Texas, for what, 70% of his presidency up until that time on vacation, and he really was ignoring Richard Clark, who had been tracking al-Qaeda for years and years and years and years and trying to tell him what was going on and what he needed to be aware of. I mean, those things happened, and so I think Donald Trump kind of hit it on the head when he called him out.
Yes, he did, and I want to say that I don't believe Bill Clinton put Donald Trump up to what he's doing, but I do believe that Donald Trump is calculating to the fact that it's either Hillary Clinton or bust. In other words,
yeah,
it's going to be me against Hillary Clinton. If I can't get Hillary Clinton to go head up and head, if I don't win it, and then I'm not going to let any other Republican win it, anybody else win it. That's what I believe. That's
yeah,
just my personal belief. I'm not saying that he schemed anything with Bill Clinton, but I think his mindset is saying, there's only one person that can have this presidency is me. His ego is big enough. But if I can't have it, then I know that the one that's going to take it is Hillary Clinton, because I'm not going to let anybody on this Republican side get it. And that's how I'm looking at it.
Well, I don't know where to start in on this deal. So please forgive me and cut me off if I'm rambling or put me on mute or whatever you want to do. But ever since Clinton, we've had nothing but corporatists presidents, and they make big money.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as Bill Clinton talking to other people and talking to Donald Trump, he understands that Donald Trump is a corporatist, but he understands how it fails. One of the reasons why you don't see a lot of generals and people like that of high capacity when you come down to national, when you come down to foreign policy outside of Hillary Clinton and some other people, you know, there's a famous quote, and I can't repeat it verbatim, but you don't run foreign wars based off mercenaries. You'll kill them because all they want is money, and they'll switch sides. And that's what we start doing. And that's the most important thing about, you know, when you're dealing with Obama, on how mad I am with him dealing with places like corporations like Halliburton, and Black Hawk and things of that nature. Not to say that those guys weren't good soldiers. Not to that, but they shouldn't have been in that position. You don't send a young man that signed up for the United States military and send him in there for $1,500 a month in a foreign land, or $2,000 a month, and then pay somebody else $8,000.
Right.
You want to talk about killing morale? Okay, you off in your Toyota truck. I'm sitting in a Humvee with no AC. That's a problem for me.
Yeah.
when you get into our foreign policy and some of the things that we're doing, one thing that's going to really hurt and kill Hillary Clinton won't win. So you can scratch that idea. What she did with Eric Springs and the way she divided it up is going to absolutely kill her. Would her emails affect her? Maybe, maybe not. That Eric Springs thing that she did, along with cahoots with Barack Obama, I got to say it, sorry, and the way they divided up Libya, is not going to be a good thing. This is not going to be a good thing. It's not going to work. It's never going to work. And then you have a lot of money that we get into CPACs and things of that nature when you're talking about an elected official, when you have not necessarily Jews that are Israel, but the Jews that are out of Israel are separate from the Jews that are here. Because the Jews that are here, they're like big prophets. They don't care nothing about Jerusalem. A lot of people don't even understand. Back when Jerusalem was formed, they were given the okay by Russia. A lot of people don't understand that. And to add to that, they could have been settled in Ghana and several other places. So you can't sit there and tell me and understand why Jerusalem as a country and how they're related to the Bible and why they would be upset and wanting to be the chosen people. I know I'm kind of going far off, but that was given to them. That wasn't something that was earned. You sit there and you talk about, let's say, the Palestinians, or you talk about Saudi Arabia. I mean, how many hijackers do you need to be able to go into Saudi Arabia? But we don't mess with Saudi Arabia. We always talk about democracy. But Saudi Arabia is not a democracy. But we don't touch them. What we told Saudi Arabia was, I call them Saudi democracy. What we told them, you lower the price on oil and do what we say do, and you make sure you pull it into the domestic dollar. And that's why we don't mess with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia and Jews don't get along. But have you noticed they don't ever have wars?
Mm-hmm.
They're next door. But you got Saudi Arabia bombing the Yemenis that's on the outside of Iran. Now, could somebody please explain that to me? Can you explain to me why when you come down to drone U.S. forces, well, not just U.S. forces, but drones and the building of drones and the selling drones, who profits most from building and selling drones? It's Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody acts like they know it. Okay, I'll get off my spiel.
That's a good point. And
yeah,
Saudi Arabia
brother,
behaves like ISIS.
Yeah. Yes, right. But the deal of it is like you're saying, that's why Donald Trump said what he said, because we're tied to Saudi Arabia for the oil.
Yep.
But we don't want that to be said. All we say is our interest in the Middle East. And our interest in the Middle East is the oil and the protection of the quote-unquote Jews or the nation of Israel from a sentimental point of view, but they are our launching pad and our base for war if we have to have war over there, and along with Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely.
And so that's,
and also,
right.
And also, gold, because when we took down Saddam, he wanted to do a North African currency that was stacked on gold and not the American dollar, not the petrol dollar.
Yes.
Gaddafi wanted to do the same thing. And this is one of the things I had on my show. It is the absolute same thing. So you have our rebels, which our rebels we created, and we started in 2003 on creating ISIS. And then it came to pass in 2006. And they just exploded. We left over, I don't know how much money we left over there, how much material we left over there, but I know we left over 50,000 Humvees, M1 tanks, everything. We just left Stinger missiles, whatever you want to do. Same thing we did to supply Russia when Russia was in Iraq. We left it over there like they wasn't going to use it. Of course they were going to use it, but we thought we were going to be able to create it and be able to control it, and now we have Frankenstein. And now that we have Frankenstein and we can control it, uh-oh, we got to go in. But see, if you go back and you look at it, and you look at, let's say you look at Syria, that man is not as half as bad as Gaddafi, his dad, or Saddam Hussein, but we still want to destroy him. Why is that?
Yes. It's all about control, brother. Let me say something else. Because of the fact that we didn't get the status agreement that we wanted with Iraq, we pulled everything out, left everything there, and everybody who bought these Denards, I never invest in the Denards because it was fake from the beginning. Because the only way you was going to get the Denards, you had to get the oil. And we weren't able to get the oil. We left $800 billion of oil over there.
Well, wait a minute. Was Denards by who? The American or somebody else? Because, you remember,
Denards was supposed to be part of the Iraqi currency. We're supposed to be investing in it.
No. I got you on that, and that was going to be boosted by us. But the president of Libya, he brought over half. Gaddafi had so much freaking gold, they told him, you need millions and millions of dollars of gold. And I've said it before. Gold standard is this simple. We stopped backing our American dollar in 1939 in gold. Our gold, the world's gold, not just our gold, the world's gold, you can put in a tennis court and you can only haul it up only three stories long. Gaddafi had dang near half the gold in the world. So when they told Gaddafi, you know what? I don't know how you're going to pay for this. I wish I had that much gold. We'd all be doing good. But Gaddafi put all his gold on the table and say, bro, this is what I got. This is all I need for y'all to help me. He had over half in gold. That was like, nope. Because if he would have done that and brought that gold standard to the table, he would have crushed everybody's economy. Everybody outside of North Africa, whether you're talking about Russia, Asia, China, he would have destroyed them. Now, nobody knows where Gaddafi gold went. Nobody knows where Saddam Hussein gold went. Nobody knows where none of this gold went. We still got homeless people. We're still running around the earth trying to we're spreading liberty. Nobody knows where none of this gold went. We trained all these rebel forces and spent over $50 billion, and we don't even know where they freaking are.
Sir, the problem with it is we're hiding behind the fact that we're spreading liberty, but really we're exercising capitalism. And that's the deal. We're doing just like Greece and Rome did. Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, what they were doing, going trying to capture nations and take stuff from them. And that's why you bring up the movie Avatar every time. We're trying to go and we're trying to take stuff in the name of liberty, just like we came to America in the name of liberty, in the name of baptizing you, in the name of Jesus. We're going to take your land from Native Americans. And we brought them inside the mission, we baptized them, made them a Christian, then took their land, and then called them savage. So we go to these other lands now. We can't take the land, but we want what they got, the oil and the gold. And we say, we come to bring you liberty. We come to take you all and go. And when people hear us talk like this, somebody listen to this podcast, archive. They'll say we're communists because we're crying out against the fact. But that's what they did with Martin Luther King Jr. He said, hey, we don't need to be down in Vietnam. We over there in Vietnam for the wrong reason. They say, you're a commie. You're a commie now. No, I'm not a communist. I'm just telling you the real. Let me tell you what. That's what Castro, you can take all day long by Castro, aligned himself with the Russian government, and then he took away the rights from his people. But the principle of what he was saying was, don't come trying to fake and shake with capitalism and tell me you're better than I am. And that's what I'm trying to say. And even Barack Obama sees that now and says, look, won't we free Cuba? And let them have a level playing field, because really, in all said and done, we went about the wrong way with Cuba. And a lot of other countries, we did that because they don't make the choices that we make. We then try to bend them to our will so we can get what we want out of them. And that's the whole concept I'm talking about. And I believe that's what Donald Trump is saying, but he put it all in one sentence and saying, listen, George W. Bush has to take some fault about 9/11 because he knows it's tied up to the relationship they had in the oil. Now let's take it back down to local politics. And then those in the Houston area, you could jump in and help us out if you decide to call it. Mr. Spikes out there, some other people out there. First of all,
I don't know if you want to know what I'm going to tell you.
I just want to hear what you got to say, brother. I want to know, do you know who's running for mayor? Do you know, if you know the names, do you really know the people? And who are we supporting? I mean, I can't vote. I live in Cypress. I live outside the city limits. So I live in Kerber.
Well,
I can't vote in elections. But of course, you know, I work inside of Houston. And so I'm curious. Is it Ben Hall? Is it Sylvester Turner? Is it Adrian Garcia? Is it some other names of people?
Okay.
I don't know their names.
I got you, brother. Now, when you come down to Agent Garcia, when he won his election for being when he came to be sheriff, okay, this was his idea. When he went and looked at the program, what he found was, and this ties right into law enforcement. So y'all not gonna hear nothing like this from anybody else outside of me. You just won't. Maybe 5 years from now, maybe you will, but a lot of people won't say it. So what happened was, with Adrian Garcia started looking at the programs that they had for the SO, the Houston Sheriff's Department, what he started looking at was a lot of people that were getting disciplined and getting punished for doing the wrong thing. What happens was they was getting shipped back to the jail. If you don't know this, when you have a Sheriff's Department, the Sheriff's Department primary money standard is generated from the jail. That's how they get their money. More people you have in jail, more money you get. Okay, so that's how that works. So what happened was when Mr. Adrian Garcia got in, he started looking at that stuff. And he's a Mexican man. But he started looking at a lot of people that were getting punished, but they were coming back and working in the jail, but they were getting cop money instead of jailer's money. So what he decided to do was, you know what? I'm going to bring in some new recruits. I'm going to let those other people stay in the jail, and then I'm going to put those recruits out there, but I'm also going to bring them to jail as like a combo system to replace them. That's how Adrian Garcia won as far as a sheriff, and that was a good program. Adrian Garcia wanted something different. Now, if you go back and look at my old boss, which was the counsel I worked with, Ron Hickman. Okay, Ron Hickman always wanted to be commissioner, and he was kind of promised that. If you go back and look at some of the case studies in law and law enforcement and in court, when you had some death suspect video that disappeared that involved Constable Hickman, now I guess going to be the sheriff, and it's going to be the sheriff, a lot of that stuff disappeared, and one officer almost went to jail, so he paid his dues, so he rewarded him. You go back and you look at, let's say, a Mr. Herman as a constable. That changed too, because what happened was he had and still has intimate knowledge on the constable. So he says, nope, you're not going to leave me, because in the constable offices, when you have one and two, when you get a new constable in there, two and three, they got to go. They're going to bring in the other people. But it's so convoluted, they couldn't. So it looks like he has to take Herman with him as far as being sheriff, but he still wants commissioner. Now, what people don't understand about, I know I'm going into a long, detailed thing. What people don't understand is all these people eat breakfast the same, at the same place, at the same time, and play golf together, swim, and have their birthday parties. And you wonder why you don't have good cops to step up, because you're not going to win. You don't have that kind of money to fight with it, even as far as a lawyer. They'll destroy you.
Yeah. So, Sylvester Turner and Ben Hall, they're both on two sides of the coin, African-American. Ben Hall comes from Republican, a more from the right, Sylvester Turner, Democrat from the left.
Do they have a chance?
I
don't know if they have a chance, because, man, that's a lot of money to fight with.
And who else they fighting against? Who's the Anglo? There's a couple of Anglo guys I saw in there. Is it Chris Bell one of them?
Yeah,
and there's another guy who's a businessman who they have the commercials where they're running through the park and everybody's calling his name. And he's a businessman. And then another guy says that he's done budgets and all this kind of besides Agent Garcia. Another guy says he's a businessman and needs a guy that can run the. I know it's going to be a runoff. Who do you think is going to make it to the runoff? Is what I'm asking.
I think Ben will make it. I just don't think he's going to have enough money to win.
Who's going to go against Agent Garcia?
It's not going to make a difference. It's not going to make a difference. Because it's just too much money, man.
But who is the other person besides Agent Garcia, I'm asking? Do you know the other candidate?
You just said his name. You made me forget it.
Chris Bell might be one of them.
And then you said another one.
That's another business guy. I don't know his name. I just know they run the commercials for him. And because in my mind, I've only paid attention to Sylvester Turner, Agent Garcia, because that's more.
Sylvester Turner. That's the one I was talking about. Okay, there we go. Now, Sylvester Turner, that may be a long shot depending on how he pushes it, because you got a lot of people that's in it, and this is connected to a lot of law enforcement people. People got to understand, when you elected mayor, it really comes down to law enforcement, and that's who promotes them. It's not necessarily the general public. Now, I don't know a whole lot about politicians and going for senator and this, that, and the other, but I know when you come down to mayor, it's whatever the police decide or the sheriff department or the constable decide who they're going to vote for, that's who wins.
Why is that, D?
Well, because it's a racket, bro. I hate to break it to you.
I understand what you're saying, but what you're saying in essence is you just wipe out the public vote, and you play it, and it's almost like you're playing into a stereotype that my vote don't count when you say that the police union don't carry the city. You have normal people out there that have the ability to vote. So I think Sylvester has a great chance of winning because he comes he grew up in the city, and if we just get off our duff, so to speak, and vote, we could carry anybody in the election that we want to carry. We just don't get up and vote.
Ron, one thing he's saying is this, and this is why we got to beat this. What he's saying is when you get the fire department union, teacher union, police union, who they endorse, they kind of sway the people, the voters that you're saying to go out there. They try to get them on to pick their family members and say go vote a certain way. So then we got to make a persuasive argument that when they get down there to vote their conscience and their mind, not what the union is telling them to vote or I'm trying to be the one in between with both of y'all are saying.
Yeah, I understand what D's saying, but Sylvester also has the Black Firefighters Union that just endorsed him, I think, this past week. So.
Are we talking about the same firefighter union that 4 years ago you had nooses hanging in their locker rooms? We talking about the same one?
We could be talking about the same ones, but still.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. And I think we can do it. I'm just saying we have to devise a different kind of plan some kind of way. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not saying I don't support them. Not at all. It's like I'll support Dr. Shirley McKellar, and her name is first is doctor. Got no problem with that. But we have to come up with and devise some different plans because as far as our local elections, we're on this young man's, we're on Pastor Riggs' show, we have to come up with some different plans because we lose local elections. That's all I'm saying. If you got a different plan, man, make it known and let's do it. I'm good with it. I got no problem with that whatsoever.
Here's why we lose the local elections, just like we lose the president of the United States every year. If everyone that was registered to vote or qualified to register to vote in the city limits, Houston, and if we're talking about for the president of the United States or governor of Texas, Dallas and San Antonio,
would register and pull the lever, would always be a Democratic state.
Absolutely.
But the folk inside of Seminoles won't do it. So the folk in the rurals and the people like in Humble, Cypress, Katy, outside, they do all the voting. The suburbans do all the voting, and the people inside the city. So that's why you can come up with a Democratic mayor, Anise Parker, who is gay, who's fighting the black church, come on, who's trying to push Proposition 1, and nothing wrong with all that. You know, I'm not trying to despise her because she's gay, but, you know, that's not what we really, you know, not when you're trying to put your lifestyle on everybody else and do Proposition 1 and let transgender people go in the restroom and all that. She can win every time, but you're going to have a Republican governor, and then the Republicans always win for the state in the presidential election in Texas, because people, when they do vote inside the city, so Sylvester does have a chance, a Democrat does have a long shot inside the city, because when they do go out and vote, Democrats do pull more weight inside the city limits. So there is a chance that Agent Garcia, but see what they're doing, they're splitting the vote, though. But Agent Garcia being a Democrat, and, you know, and Hispanic, and then by Sylvester Turner being a Democrat and African-American, they're splitting the vote. They're splitting the vote against the Republicans, Ben Hall and whoever else is running. And that's where I have a concern at. So there is a long shot that Democrats agent, you know, as I said, Lee Brown, Democrat. Captain Wimbaugh, Democrat. Ben White, Bill White. Was it Bill White? Bill White, Democrat. Neese Parker, Democrat. So in the city, if the folk inside the city limit will vote, you're going to get a Democrat. And I'm not saying the Democrats always have all the best plans, but, you know, what I'm saying, they usually run that way in Houston city limits. But there's a long shot this time, yes.
If I could say this, and, you know, I think me and you, Pastor Riggins, I think we're probably about the same age. And Ron is a little older than me and you, and Baron Glass is a little older than me and you. But one thing that I understand very clear, you know, I don't know.
I'm 47. I'm 47. I don't know how old you are, but I'm 47.
Okay, well, I ain't 40 then, so I'm sexier than you then.
I'm the same age around Ron and him. I just look young. That's the deal about it.
No,
I look like I'm
30.
Oh, yeah, you look like
I'm
32. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Well, all three of y'all, look, you, Baron Glass, is that it? You, Baron Glass, I think that's it. And Ron Spikes, I'm sorry. There we go. So all y'all look very handsome, and I hope I look where y'all look when I get to that age. But, you know, one thing I want to say about it is when you're talking about lower elections, we don't really push, and I don't really hear from a lot of people about, okay, well, you know, who's running for sheriff and who's running for constable, because when you dial 911, that's what's coming to your house. And I don't understand why we don't push it. I've heard a few different people on this program that sit there and say, you know what, we don't need more black cops. I agree. We don't need more black cops. We need more black quality cops, and we need more white quality cops and more quality white Mexican cops and Latino cops, however you want to push it. But that's where your politics absolutely start, because those are the people that show up at your house with guns. Those are the people that can separate you from your freedom without a vote. I can show up at your house and fix that case any way I want to, and you might get off of it, but you still can go to jail.
And you still going to have to
I'll arrest you right in front of your family. And ain't
you're
nothing you
still going
to
have to have the worst part of that is that you're going to have to hire a lawyer to get out of it. And therefore, you're gonna have money. Everything that you do that the police involves the police being arrested by police is gonna involve money. So therefore, it's taking money out of your house. You gotta put a bail money to get out of jail. You gotta go get a lawyer to fight the thing. You gotta pay court costs. So by the time it's over with, is it truly worth it? I just don't see it. But to come back to the point that you was making earlier, we had two city council members on earlier this afternoon, and that's the same point that they was making. A lot of times we overlook the local elections to go to the national elections, and too many people sit at home and don't want to vote. We need to come. I agree with you, D. It has to be a strategy to get people out to vote. And Pastor Riggins, you were correct, because there's more Democratic voters registered across Texas than it ever was Republicans. But on the day of the voting, only Republicans show up. So you're absolutely correct in that. If we just had to register Democratic voters, we could carry the state blue.
Let me ask y'all a question. And I don't want to tell Pastor Rick. I don't want. You can always mute me anytime you want, because I know sometimes I talk too much. I have no problem with that. Well, let me ask you something.
You make my show easy, brother. If I want to wrap
okay,
it up live,
good.
You make it easy. All I got to do is facilitate.
Good.
Yes,
and then I know Rihanna will probably come in on this. Okay, here come my kids to make all this daggum noise. Be quiet. I'm on the phone. So when we're sitting there, we're talking about immigration. One of the things that would be that's very important is electoral votes. So now, how this thing is being constructed, I have no idea. But what's transpiring is they're starting to go off of not who's registered to vote as far as electoral. And I wish Dr. Shirley McKellar was on here to maybe explain it better, because I'm pretty sure she could, because I can't touch her on this topic. But it goes off population. So here we go with the immigration.
Yeah, I can kind of explain what you're talking about, brother. It's gerrymandering.
Yes, sir.
What they did, they redrew the districts to make it where
absolutely
you only could vote in certain areas, and so that's why they pile up the vote where the suburbs have almost their vote almost carry more weight than the inner city, because they made it where too many where the districts are where they have more congressmen out of seats there in the rural areas than in the city areas. They'll give Sheila Jackson Lee a big old district, a big old wide district, and then they'll go into the suburbs and give small districts to have more seats, so that when you have more Republicans come out, so when the Electoral College, it made Texas have 34 instead of 32 or 30 in the Electoral College, but then you have more Republicans that you're putting up there, and so then it makes us turn into a Republican state because of the fact that
wow.
more, right, and that's what it's called gerrymandering. And that's just one of the things that if we can get the Congress back into the hands of the Democrats, so it's like, is it the dog, is it the chicken or the egg? If we can get it, because it makes it where more Republicans and all across the states have done this, all across the United States. And so more Republicans I see showing up because of gerrymandered districts. They'll make Cleveland, Ohio a big old district. You have one or two congressmen, and they'll be Democrats. But then all the suburbs around there give them
yeah.
smaller districts so you can have more Republican people in the suburbs.
Well, but it's starting to, it's what I think what I was pointing at,
wow.
it started to change because it's not going off of that now. Now it's going off of population, who's in there and who's not. And that's why you had this big old push for immigration, because it's not going, when you're talking about electoral votes, it's not going on who's registered to vote and who's white, who's black. It's who's there. And are they minorities or are they not?
Yeah, but the Electoral College is what he's talking about, and an Electoral
right, the
college is made
part
up of
the law, the Constitution.
People.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead, Pastor.
We're saying the same thing, D. We're saying the same
yeah,
thing. They're
yeah.
stacking the population.
Yeah, see, that's how California changed everything, because
mm-hmm.
of the population and then people coming out to vote. And Texas is going to do the next. Texas is going to be the next. So after you have Texas and after you have so we've already had California. You might not ever see
yeah,
another
Florida.
President.
But Florida, Florida, Florida was able to do it. Florida was able to do it. But here's what
yeah.
you got to do. We've got
yep.
to do. The Democrats got to move into the suburbs in Texas. See, Texas is the biggest. It's the strongest hold on all of that. In other words, in
yeah.
Florida, they people were able to spread out in city and suburbs. California definitely in cities and suburbs. But Texas is the biggest. Because we're in the deep South, we're in the deep Bible Belt and religious and the conservative right, and so that's why it's hard to even get a Democratic governor anymore. Ever since the last, what was the lady's name? The last one we had,
Ann Richards.
Right. Because it's Ann Richards. Because we've got to move into the suburbs and begin
yeah.
to take some of those. It may turn against them, turn a gerrymander back against them. It's what we have to do.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing to do. Ohio beats it every time. But that's why Ohio right now, well, see, Ohio, if you notice, Ohio always goes for a Democratic president, but Ohio got that deal where they got a Republican governor. How they was able to do it? They gerrymandered those districts to get a Republican governor. But they still can't get enough of power to make it work for the president.
And you're right, and that's why Rihanna. Let me say this,
sure.
And then I'm sorry. Please don't slap me next time you see me. That's why Karl Rove was so stuck on. No, we're gonna win Ohio. Oh no, the vote's not in. We're gonna end Ohio. You can go back and look at it when he was on Fox. Oh no, we're gonna win Ohio. No, the vote's ain't in. We're gonna win Ohio, and he didn't.
A little meltdown.
He thought the gerrymandering was going to happen, and they tried to scare him for the polls by having the voter ID law. And they did that in Florida too. What they did to do in Florida, they'd open up the polls to 12, because when the will of the people, the polls were closed at 7, they was voting till 1 o'clock in the morning. You want voter ID? We got our ID, but we're going to stand in line till 1 o'clock in the morning until we have the right to vote. And it backfired on them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and since the Supreme Court stripped away Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, that all had to do with how they're allowed to draw the maps in the districts as well. So, I mean, they can redraw them without, for a long time, they had to submit, when they would redraw districts, they would have to submit it to a higher office, like every state. And it would have to be approved. Well, now, I mean, they can draw these districts any way they want to, and they can redraw them any time they want to. Isn't that right?
Yes, here's the deal. Let's say in Cyprus. Let's say Cyprus has 500,000 people. I don't know how many people we have living here. 300,000. They could come in here and make three districts in here if they want to, and then go over to 4th Ward and 5th Ward, Acres Home and 5th Ward, to make it one district, and they might have a million people. Get it? And so you have Sheila Jackson Lee representing 1 million people, while in the suburbs you have half of that amount of people getting represented by three people, but those three people end up being Republicans against the one Democrat. And so then what you did, you went inside the numbers, right, and you gerrymandered that way. And you made a less amount of people have the same amount of power as more people. And that's what
it doesn't matter if people move around, though, because they can keep redrawing them to their advantage every time.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I never had it broken down just like you did right now, and I never have understood it. But now I have a clear perception. See, that's the reason why you always call in the Blog Talk Radio shows, because you can always understand. And Pastor Riggins, what you just broke down explains where the problem is in the state of Texas, because if Sheila Jackson Lee, we think that she has all this power, but basically all they did was gave her power over a large district, but she doesn't really have any power compared to what the suburban people can come in and dictate to what Sheila Jackson Lee can do.
Right, because here's what happens. Because you have three suburban guys all on the same page against one guy, one lady. Furthermore, more money in the suburbs, she'll be over all these places in Acres Home and everything, where the tax-based dollars, you know, look at the neighborhoods. The housing is down, everything. Taxes out here in the suburbs are high. And most of half the people in the voters, or a quarter of the people in there have a felony, can't vote. See, so you got a big old land space, got a lot of people under your name, but how many voters do you really have? How many much money do you really have? So you're just a puppet, almost, in a sense.
Well, let me ask you a question, because, you know, that was my area that I used to work in. So let me ask you a question, and you're probably going to laugh when I say this to you. How many people you think you have in Sydney Harbor that can't vote? I used to work the area. They got a lake in the backyard. I love Cypress Road Hill. How many you think people can't vote?
I don't know, brother. I couldn't tell you.
They all can vote. Now, the crazy
That's what
thing...
I thought. That's
there you go. Absolutely. Hey,
I live in
Coles
Crossing,
and
how many people think you can't vote? Do you know that? I live in Coles Crossing, and every election cycle, guess what I get on my doorstep? Some Republican stuff, because they think I'm a Republican because I live in Coles Crossing.
Now, now, since we're going
to
talk about
funny to say, I'm a Democrat, and the guy around the corner, an Anglo guy, he's a Democrat. But everybody else I know over here is Republican. But they think we're Republicans because we live out here.
Wow.
Now, see, you live in a special kind of neighborhood. Since we're going to talk about local elections. Now,
yes.
You live in the Mud District, correct?
Yes, sir. Mud 65.
Okay. Absolutely. So who runs your Mud District?
I really don't even know, brother.
I really don't know.
I get upset every time I try to go vote. They change the voting. They even change my voting poll every time.
Okay, you know where you got that little shopping center right off Cypress Rose Hill to the left, the right that goes to the train tracks. Over there, you got a little club. You got the I think it's a Walgreens. You got an IHOP.
Mm-hmm.
Is there not a precinct 4 office over there?
I believe it is.
You know that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Who's your sergeant over there?
I don't know the sergeant over there.
That's the problem.
I don't know the sergeant.
We're talking about local election.
Because what I have to do because of the fact that I live here, but I want to help out in the neighborhood, I go into Acres Home. I go into Spring area. I go into A-League where my church is, and I work in those areas with Southwest. Like, I work with the Southwest police station over there in off of Richmond and by Richmond and Westheimer and there Ashley. That's where I work in the communities where I come from, because out here I don't have a voice. Out here, unless I find myself getting on the school board for the Cy Fair school board, unless I find myself getting in some type of, like, because like you say, it's a mud district. So I go back into the communities and work where my people at. So I was going to say, when I try to go vote, they move the voting polls around every time. And last time I was like 2 minutes late. I chased the voting poll for 30 minutes. And this was 2010. And when I finally found the voting poll, they moved it on purpose. When I found the voting poll, I got there. My watch says 7 o'clock. The guy says 7:02. You ain't coming up in here. I said, sir, I've been chasing the poll for 30 minutes. I got off of work.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all moved to 2 places. He said, you're not coming in to vote. I closed the door on you. I said, okay. So when it was time to vote for the 2012 election, I took off from work and went voted. Because I said, you're not going to fool me on this again. And so, but that's what goes on out here.
If you get another opportunity and you have something to do like that, you make sure you call me. I'm very well versed in Lieutenant Cupid. And I think the sergeant out there has been demoted to corporal. It should have been fired. That's the same one I brought charges to. I'll give you all the paperwork that I've got. The next time you have a problem out there with Precinct 4, you make sure you call me. And call the news camera so I can sit there and talk about everything. The last thing in the world they want is Mr. D talking. They don't want that.
Yes.
So you just let me know, but you just keep doing a great job. Man, you got a great show. And I'm not trying to dictate the show, but I hope we have some other females, or you have some. I'm sorry, not me. You have some other females that come online and talk about abortion and kind of what it means to them, because this stuff is impressive. Man, if my wife go out there and get raped, and she says, you know what, I want to have abortion. Do I tell my wife, no, you're wrong, you're going to have, you're going to have this kid, we're going to make this kid right? Or do I sit back and say, you know what, baby, man, it's however you want to do it, it's up to you, I'm good with whatever you want to do. Because we
here's
talk
what I
about
believe.
Family all the time.
Yeah, here's what I believe, and this is going to come from a guy that's a believer, a pastor and everything. If somebody gets raped and they do the rape kit on them, before they leave the hospital tonight, that doctor need to find out how you can take care of everything they need to be taken care of. And that's what I believe. Because the person was violated. Hello. So if they got to say it's a 2 or 3 week process, or we got to wait to see if they're pregnant, we got to go back in. They've been violated. I'm sorry. They've been violated. Now, you can say, well, we're going to take away your preaching lifestyle, and you can do that. I got my own. My point of it is I don't believe that you should subject somebody to something like that based on the fact that you're hollering about we're going to find out if we're going to do abortion. No, the doctor should go ahead and do everything he's supposed to do to take care of that situation. Now, that's just me from Jump Street.
Mm-hmm. You know what, well, Pastor, I'm sorry, Rihanna, I yield for you. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
No, you good. Go ahead.
Well, I'll just quickly say, I have to throw out there, since it came back up, the rape exception, when they're talking about it as policy, you got to be careful in listening to how they talk about that as well, because just like I outlined earlier, when they talk about defunding Planned Parenthood and they say it's about their convictions and feelings about abortion, that's just not true. And when they start talking, 2010 was the year where everyone wanted to talk about rape. But the problem is, when they start playing games with exceptions, mm-hmm. they are ignoring the reality that a lot of women do not report sexual assault. It is a humiliating, demeaning, it's a thing that puts a lot of guilt on the shoulders of the person who is the victim. And all too often, they don't report it right away. And so if you start playing games with the law, and this is something that these staunch anti-choice policymakers, they know. I mean, they're motivated by this. If you start putting exceptions in the law, what about all those women who don't report the sexual assault? It kind of leaves them high and dry. That's why playing around with exceptions as policy, and I'm not referring to your opinions on this, I'm talking about just from a policy standpoint.
Yes.
We've got to adjust how we listen to what our politicians are saying. They very rarely are saying exactly what they mean. It's never, ever black and white. There is always a hidden agenda, even with the rape exception to abortion. It's kind of a farce. It's just further little hoops to jump through, further restrictions, further ways. I mean, out of the whole rape conversation, that's how states started creating these laws where you have to get a transvaginal ultrasound. That is a sexual mm-hmm. assault if it's against your will. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Listen to what the words they're saying when they talk about exceptions, when it's somebody else's body.
And I'm going to go way deep. This is my program. I can go way deep. Let's go back to the 1800s and 1700s. Where was all this when you were raping our women down in the shacks and stuff in slavery, coming out with the mulattoes and the house ends? Come on, don't talk to me about that.
That's right.
Absolutely. And, Pastor, it's another thing that most people forget to point out when they start talking about these abortion clinics or Planned Parenthood. You know, on one hand, they say they don't want to have an abortion, but then they don't want to take care of the child when he comes into this world.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody went ahead and gave birth to a child, they're taking away every bit of help that they have to survive. So you don't want to take care of them even when they're here. So where's your argument? As a Republican, I just don't understand. I'm totally lost. You don't want to give up any funds when they come into this world. You don't want to help the mother take care of them. You don't want to make sure that they get a fair education. It's so many things that you don't want to do when they get here. But then you tell that mother that she has to stick with whatever she's stuck with whatever she's got. That's a dumb. Mm-hmm. You basically just putting everybody behind the eight ball.
I'm gonna add this to what Ron said, and this was surprising to me because for a while I was a pretty good supporter of this guy, and that was not Rand Paul but Ron Paul, but I remember listening to him.
He's dead.
I remember listening to him on a program, and I think it was on TYT, Young Turks, and. Mm-hmm. Subs came up, and somebody asked him, okay, well, what do you want to do with somebody that's in a coma or is in the position of going through a fatal stroke? And the answer was really simple, and it was shocking to me. Well, mm-hmm. they can't afford it, so that's just the way life works. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee you, if I show up at his damn doorstep and he can't breathe and nobody can do CPR, they're going to ask me to do CPR. I don't care.
He said that's you what can... freedom's all about. Remember that, Dee?
Yeah.
He added, that's what freedom is all about.
Yeah, so you're struggling to breathe, and you want me to sit there and say, okay, yep, that's freedom, and just leave you there.
Right.
I like to see how long I last when I'm working as a law enforcement and or security, and you get shot, and I don't run to aid, or I don't protect you.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I like to point out, because I'm going to get off this thing real quick, I'm going to listen, I'm not going to get off the show. I don't know... outside of this show of Blog Talk Radio and Pastor Reagan's, Rihanna, Muddy Waters, Dr. Shirley MacTemple. I don't know why I call her Shirley MacTemple. I just think of music.
Shirley
Sorry.
MacTemple.
Sure, I'm just going to call her Shirley
Shut
MacTemple.
Shirley MacLaine.
I'm just stuck on it. I know, I'm just, don't you correct me on about calling nobody no names. Oh, no, you can't do it. You stop it. But I know that those people that I just named are extremely concerned. Be honest with you, there's only two ministers that I listen to, and neither one of them are Muslim. But I'm Muslim. But I'll listen... Pastor Riggins, and I'm missing a day with another pastor who is also Christian. Do you know I don't really listen to Muslim ministers? And the reason why I don't, because I can't connect with them. I can't connect for whatever reason. I just can't connect with them because they don't come from where I come. My wife, my mother, my granddaddy, my dad, everybody comes from a Christian background. I told Pastor Riggins this one time. Whether you believe in the Bible, Quran, the Torah, truth of the matter is, I think he's going to come out of the church. And one of the reasons why I say that is because when you start talking about Islam and Arabic, they were the biggest slave traders. And I don't want to get into a whole big soliloquy about stuff when you start talking about the Nation of Islam and Elijah Muhammad. And Elijah Muhammad, he wasn't a perfect man. He was a man. Do I think he was a prophet? No. Do I think he was a messenger? Yeah. But my thing is, nobody else came to black aid like he did and like some of the Black Panthers did. You sit there and let us rot. And then you come in and you sit there and say, you know what? You're no good. You're not preaching true Islam. Okay, well, you never came here to anybody's aid. So my thing is, hey, man, you know, guess what? The hell with you. Because you never came to anybody. Unless we can give absolute tithes and things of that nature, you know, who cares what you think? Because if we wasn't a factor, you would never been here in the first place. You just want votes, and you want us to promote what you're promoting. Okay, sorry. Got off on the wrong track. But this discussion is a very good discussion, and I really appreciate it. Man, this going to make me wake up tomorrow and be good. I got an opportunity to babysit on Friday night, and then I know I had round two on Saturday night. So tonight is the one night I got to enjoy myself with my wife. I didn't know I was going to have all these kids. A kids fest. So if y'all can, man, volunteer with some, no matter what your belief is, volunteer with some of these kids and help these kids. Because they need our help. If you're a granddad, you're a mom, you're an uncle, you're a sister, you're a nephew, your aunt, volunteer with some of these kids and try to do a better job with some of these kids. Talk about it and let's figure it out.
Yes, sir. Thank you, D. Thank you for coming on, man. I always thank you for your support. I thank you for believing in what we're doing, and thank you for all your comments, brother. And we'll keep pushing on, and you keep us encouraged, and every time you come on, and we thank you for that. I only got a few more minutes, and I'll be getting off the show. I think TJ has a comment, and we'll be trying to get to a wrap up. Yes, sir. How you doing, TJ?
Good. So this is my take on abortion, adoption, all that sort of stuff. In Florida, it was unconstitutional for a homosexual couple to adopt until 2010. From 1977 to 2010, it was illegal. So all these people that are anti-abortion, I mean, people either want their kids or they don't. So if we don't have abortion, the kids are going to go where? In the custody of the state. And then what's going to happen? People that want kids couldn't adopt them until 2010. And that leaves an unnecessary burden on the state to take care of kids. And I'll be the first one to admit, I was raised Catholic, but I'm the most backwards Catholic you will ever meet in your whole entire life, because I support abortion. And if I feel like if it's a female's wish to have an abortion, then that's her body. And the government, the church, is no person to state what a person can and can't do with their body. And that's just my take on it. We had a Planned Parenthood rally the other day in downtown Orlando. There was protesters out there, and one female was agging my sister on to join the anti-Planned Parenthood movement. And my sister told her that she supported adoption, and this young lady kept going on and on about how her mother was raped and committed suicide after she was born. And I mean, that I don't want to sound mean, I don't want to sound lewd, I don't want to sound, but maybe the reason her mother committed suicide was because she had to look at a product of rape every day. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Here's the deal, and TJ, I thank you for your comments. The point that you make, I think that I would stand in agreement with, is that God gives us a free will about every decision in our life. And how can we legislate morality when God gives us free will? Not that I agree with abortion, but I don't agree with taking a woman's choice away from her. Let her have her free will. If I love her, if I teach her how to love herself, if I teach her how to love who she is, if I teach her how to love life, maybe she wants to love that baby and have to make adoption an option, or make another choice, or to keep the baby. But I've got to teach her how to love. And so a lot of these people line up and they be trying to pillage the abortion clinics and shoot the abortion doctors and throwing rocks into them and doing all this crazy stuff and hollering about your baby killers. You're not teaching love. You're teaching hate. And so if you're teaching hate, how are you going to teach somebody how to have self-worth and love themselves, and then they can be able to make the right choice, as Rihanna said earlier, make the right choice with a clear mind, because they've been given a free will. And that's, and I'll close it out. We went in full circle. I didn't even get to touch on Hillary Clinton and the Democratic debate and all. We'll come up with some more of that next time. We're rocking and rolling. We're deep into the political system and the political season. We'll pick up some more about the local elections, Proposition 1, next time, because the election is going to be within a week or so after that. And so we need to come back on these issues on next Sunday. It was a good discussion. Thank you for all that were talking. Thank you for all that were rapping.
Can I ask one more question? Don't leave yet. Wait a minute, Pastor Richards. Don't leave me yet. Can I ask you one more question?
Let me ask you a question. Thanks for all the listeners, because D might be asking y'all questions. Y'all just listening. Go ahead, D.
Yes, sir. Now, how do we regulate vasectomies? And who regulates it?
That's not regulated.
Okay, I'm done. I promise you, I'm done. I'm not going to mess with it.
It's
I'm
not
done.
Regulated. So, right. So, what you're saying, you make the very valid point. If we're going to regulate abortions, why not regulate vasectomies? Mm-hmm. And that's why.
Just saying.
That's why the law, I won't say the Bible, that's why 1973 Roe versus Wade really makes a lot of sense, because if you can't regulate a man, how are you trying to regulate a woman? I think I got a text that came in. I can't see it. It might be. Let's see what the engineer is saying. We're still here, live. It's Pastor A. Riggins. Yes. Okay. So we're going to be wrapping it up now, and I think we all need a little mercy when we leave the show. Mercy, God. Please give us mercy. May God bless you. I pray. I'll just wrap it up live. Toss A.F. Riggins. The song is called Mercy. And Todd is in the Tuesday night. You want to hear the word of God. You want to hear a sermon being preached. You want to have Bible study. This Tuesday we'll be back on at 7 o'clock p.m. Real People, Real Life, Real Answers. May God bless you. And we'll end with the song Mercy by James Ingham.
Have mercy.